Hey, Central Illinois professionals, do you know where people go to learn more about you? They typically either go to your About Us section of your website or your LinkedIn profile. And guess what the first impression is that they see? That's right, it is your professional headshot. Your headshot is part of your brand. Your brand should proudly show the world how passionate you are about delivering quality products and services to your customers. At Studio 21, you won't get the boring old headshots that everyone else has. When you get photos with Melissa Harden at Studio 21, your headshots will show off your strength, confidence, and approachability. To book a professional headshot appointment for you and your team, call Melissa at 217-962-0048 or visit www.melissamharden.com. That's MelissaMharden.com. And let Melissa at Studio 21 help you stand out from the crowd.
Welcome to the Central Illinois Business Leaders Podcast, where business owners, thought leaders, and community champions from across Central Illinois come to share their story. The Central Illinois Business Leaders Podcast. Anything less would be uncivilized.
What's up, Central Illinois? I'm Derek Hayden. I am your host of the Central Illinois Business Leaders Podcast, powered by Zambu. Zambu is a delicious grapefruit or wild berry vodka-based spirit infused with a Brazilian buzz button. It's smooth, tasty, and leaves you with a signature tingle. Learn more at ZambuLiquors.com. Zambu, taste the tingle. All right, Central Illinois, today's guest is the CEO and co-founder of Voltage Digital Marketing. Ladies and gents of Central Illinois, please welcome Neil Twa. How are you doing, Neil?
I'm good this morning, Derek. How are you, sir?
Doing very well. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Excited to learn about your business, your story. But before we do, I'm going to ask you a few icebreaker questions, Neil, if you're ready.
Okay. Some curveballs. Let's go.
There we go. All right. We've kind of changed up our icebreaker questions to ask some unique questions. So I'm going to ask you the first question. If you could go into battle with any animal, what would that animal be and why?
Oh boy, I've never been asked that kind of question. That's interesting.
Good. That's what I like to hear.
The first thing that comes to mind is probably not the best, but I'd say a rhinoceros.
I like it. Why would you say rhinoceros?
My mind shifted between an elephant and a lion, but I think the elephant and the lion might turn on me, and at least the rhinoceros I could get behind. And maybe he's just going to go and I just follow. I think there the other two might either stomp me or eat me, so I probably won't go with those.
I like it. Well, you know, I think we've actually had that answered before by another guest.
Oh, yeah.
Because he said, have you ever tried to stop a rhino?
That's kind of what I was thinking. I'm like, I just get behind him and just go, right? And he's like, exactly. Probably not going to know I'm even behind him.
Exactly. Exactly.
Not going to be thinking about eating me. So that's always good.
That's a good answer. So second question, Neil, if you could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
Any superpower? And you're going back to my kid. Like, I wanted to be Superman when I was a kid. Like, who didn't want to be? Like, when I was Halloween, I wore like the plastic costume and the face mask, you know, because that ages me. I would say Superman. And then what would the power be? I guess, you know, the ability to fly, probably.
Yep.
I mean, all of his things, the ability to fly would probably be the coolest.
That would be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool. Last question, more of a business question.
Okay.
What do you feel is the biggest hurdle or struggle that business owners are facing today? And how would you recommend maybe jumping that hurdle?
You know, that's a great question. I can't necessarily speak for all business owners, but I mean, in terms of being a business owner, in obviously an economy of business and what we do, I think the struggle is usually trying to, determine the obvious. I'm going to say the obvious, but to me, it's obvious of maximizing profits for longevity with any unknown situation and any turmoil in a market or condition. It's most business owners won't just think, well, not always think, how can I take advantage of this? There's blood in the streets, you know, warm butter, sure. Right? But they'll want to create longevity to weather the storm and go through it. And that might mean, you know, making some difficult decisions. And so I would say pivoting. Or pivoting in different directions is probably their greatest opportunity. And in a lot of cases, it's the greatest weakness for business owners as to what decisions to make and when to make them and what order to make them in order to create that opportunity, that longevity or that growth opportunity when things feel like they're turning down. A lot of business owners want to grasp at straws, I think. They want to gain and try to hold onto things and kind of feel like they got to hoard them for that time frame. But you know, I've been through a number of these economic things in the last 18 years as a business owner. And I will say, you know, hoarding is not the right answer. It might feel like the right answer, and it might feel like the most common thing to do. Mm-hmm. But there's so much opportunity in these kinds of moments. I don't know that everybody always sees them. It's kind of hard.
Sure. Excellent. Well, that's a great answer. I'm sure that's one that our business owners need to hear that are listening right now. So that's awesome. Well, Neil, you breezed through the icebreaker questions pretty easily. So
did I win?
You did, yes.
I'll take
it as
a win.
We'll send your prize money in the mail.
Rhinoceros. We were watching, if you know, Flight of the Conchords, that band that's going to sing the songs, and they have Rhinoceros Rex and Rhinoceros. We were just listening to that the other day, and I think that's probably why I thought of that.
Well, hey, whatever brings it top of mind, it worked out for you. That's perfect.
Rhinoceros Rex.
There you go. Well, Neil, at this point, I'm going to hand you the mic. You tell us your story. Take us back as far as you'd like. Bring us up to speed with what you got going on today. Anything in between you want to share as well?
Well, let's not go too far into the back, way back machine here and things that only my mom might find interesting. But I mean, in business, in simple terms, I had no plans to go to college. I had no plans to take the normal route. That was an opportunity for me. My dad was a 30-year hard working, you know, stay with the one company, had the old, you know, thermos from Stanley Cup and did the black lunchbox every day for 30 years. Mm-hmm. But I knew things could be different for me, even though we didn't have a lot when I was young. And so I never planned to go to college. I actually planned to go to the Air Force. So I spent my entire career in high school just kind of breezing through. It was not very complicated for me. I did really well in high school and didn't care about it, quite honestly, because I wasn't planning scholarships and the thing. I just wanted to go be a fighter pilot.
Sure.
So, you know, you asked about superpowers earlier, and I was thinking, like, what's a superpower? That doesn't relate to that part, but it came to my mind.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, you know, being the size that I am, 6'5", pretty large guy, I didn't fit the cockpit. So that wasn't going to be my outcome. So I was pretty disappointed when I found out I could be a fire pilot. So my fallback was to go to college. Didn't want to be there. Spent 3 years kind of fumbling around in that nonsense, failed out a couple of times. But in the process, I had the opportunity to basically jump and pivot in that because the internet came online. And I know that sounds kind of old school, but man, this is not a long ways back from so much change. And long story short, the internet came online and I just jumped into the world and went wherever it was going. You couldn't learn it except be experienced by it. You couldn't be taught by it because you were learning from everybody around you and there was no school, education, or track to follow. You just had to dig in and with tenacity and grit, figure out your way through it. Mm-hmm. And that led me to opportunities. I taught myself how to become a programmer. And I started programming as a contractor, got on to Sprint as a full-time gig, basically flipped a resume into the PCS division that was launching the first mobile phone. Wow. And had an opportunity to fly with those guys. We had about 5,000 people pulled in from Sprint long distance that launched that first brick phone with the 1 hour battery. Uh-huh. And got to watch that thing go to market. And by the time I left, IBM had hired me away from Sprint based on what I was doing in the world of knowledge management and information tracking and artificial and human machine learning that we were doing in the latent semantic world of which so much of it we just live around now and don't realize how much we live around now. Long story short, you know, we had about 80,000 employees in Sprint. So I got to watch a hyper growth situation expand from the inside out and then went over to IBM and for almost 5 years, expanded that into other markets and channels into large companies in Fortune 500 and started to get to a place where life was changing. Didn't want to be on the road anymore, getting married, you know, thinking life was going to be very different. And IBM said, hey, you know, go to Argentina, we're moving your division or early retirement. So I took it. I pivoted, you know, talk about pivoting. I jumped. Uh-huh. And then for about 18 years, I've been on my own. I've done a series of companies in the oil and gas, high tech, e-commerce world, technology and management consulting, stepped into affiliate and online marketing to help expand my business in 2008, 9, and 10. Found out I was really good at the marketing side, and that led me into marketing business lead generation for companies and businesses, and then tied into physical products along with lead generation for services. Found out I was really good at that. And so I realized that if I was going to expand that beyond just, you know, clicks, then I needed to do something in the more business world and physical products. It seemed to be the obvious answer. So I went out and researched that and, you know, there was infrastructure cost and warehouse cost and people cost, and there was a lot of logistics cost. And I'm like, dang, that's a lot of stuff to get to the place where you can own all of this or make it work as a business. And some of you listening to this might be in the manufacturing or business world and have warehouses and stuff and maybe relate to what I'm talking about. But so I was like, there's got to be a slightly different way to do that. And as it turns out, Amazon had just bought about 4 years prior to that, a company, a logistics company, that they rebranded as FBA or Fulfilled by Amazon. And basically it was a logistics company. So they wrapped it into their fold and they started moving more than just books. They started moving all kinds of physical products. Well, by 2010, they were getting pretty good at it and it was starting to really take a run at the market. And I said, well, maybe I can sell products on that. And so I started to just flip some products. Long story short, 10 years later, I flipped, you know, 8 brands on Amazon. We sold more than $500 million in sales collectively between our companies and our client companies over the last 10 years, and have spent a lot of time moving into omni channels or other channels beyond Amazon as well, into other businesses. We now buy and acquire businesses. We help exit businesses. And, you know, I went through the warehouse stage for just a little bit of time there in the past. Ended up with about 20,000 square foot of warehouse and 12 employees, as it turns out, because we needed it to move more stuff, and then realized that that wasn't the best way to automate this business, which is some of the things I think we'll talk about next, was how to build this into more of a lifestyle business that didn't require me at that point to fly 2 times a month to Utah, and ended up spending 80 hours a week working myself into a hole in my own business. And then I had to spend 2 to 3 years getting out of it. And learning those lessons while getting to a position now where I can, you know, homeschool my girls with my wife. We live on 50 acres in the Ozark Mountains. My time is now mine. I'm able to podcast and talk about what we're doing while running an operation business behind me that has at least 12 contractors involved in all the operations of our company now, but no employees. So
very cool.
Interest to somebody who's listening. I have no
idea. That's incredible. That's incredible. Well, very cool. So, you mentioned where I'd like to start at is you mentioned FBA, and you did say what it stands for, Fulfilled by Amazon.
Correct.
So exactly how does that work when you say Fulfilled by Amazon? What is Amazon doing with your products, and how are they helping you reduce your employee count, like you just said?
Well, they have, you know, $15, $20 billion of infrastructure now, and they are now the 6th largest logistics company in the world. And they have about 20, at last check, you can check me on this internet, but there's about 28% market share. And that is the closest behind them is Walmart at about 7.8 or 9%. So way back there.
Yep.
So they have the market when it comes to moving products last mile to the customer. Mm-hmm. And when I really saw that we could take advantage of that about 6 years ago, I'd spent the previous 3 to 5 years kind of messing around with their system and looking at other third party or logistics companies to move products, and then just didn't really realize myself what we could really do to power that system through Amazon and kind of leverage them, right? They're just a tool like a hammer or some other saw that you leverage, and you can ship from your own warehouse or your own house, and you can ship products to your customer. But when it comes to certain values, time and money and energy and attention involved in these businesses, and you look at all the things that they've leveraged and the trust and authority to have to deliver products now, even the way they do returns and stuff, you know, there's an opportunity cost for all things. It just seems to be a better opportunity cost to let them ship the product to the customer. And then we focus on the marketing and brandability of the products and the customer, what's called, you know, customer avatar or profile of our customer. Yeah. We really focus on providing good products that they want. And Amazon delivers those products to the customers. So that's why it becomes such an interesting opportunity, is that, you know, I can run this literally from anywhere in the world. I don't have to be sitting anywhere in a warehouse anymore. I don't have to manage the employees. I just manage the pipeline. I manage the logistics. We manage the marketing. We manage the branding. And Amazon handles that customer to last mile. And so it really became a great opportunity to build a business that has intrinsic value. It has an asset base, because we take, you know, fiat currency and put it into a physical asset, right, that has a 5 to 10x return on it. And then that becomes an opportunity to build an asset like a house, if you will, that is going to appreciate over time. In 3 to 5 years, it has potentially generational wealth exit opportunity to sell that business.
Yeah.
So we build to exit. That's been our model. It's been our scale. It's been our growth opportunity for the last 5+ years, is to really focus on the building of the assets to an exitable state.
Very cool. So I'm thinking of this from a, I want to say, a starter perspective. Yeah, someone who's maybe, someone who's maybe heard of FBA understands, okay, that sounds like something I wouldn't have to have employees in a warehouse, but what about the product?
Always a product, right?
So tell us a little bit about how maybe your clients or how people in general identify a product. Maybe they have their own product that they want to get manufactured, or it's a product that is already available. They're just able to maybe make it their own. Tell us a little bit about how that works.
There are different, let's call them mechanisms of selling the product. There is, you know, retail arbitrage, as it's referred to. You may have heard of it as like shop your way to wealth. I find something, I sell something, and I'll buy low, sell high. I get it from other places like Home Depot, Walmart, whatever, and I sell it through Amazon or other mechanisms, and I make a profit. There's wholesaling, which is similar to that, buying pallets of other goods, you know, and selling them, usually not your brand, et cetera. There is drop shipping, which is sort of similar to what's called a white label, which is they pre-manufactured a product. I might be able to slap a label on it and send it out, but it's pre-manufactured. I can make no changes or customizations to it.
Right.
And there's private label, which we hopefully all understand if we're listening to this on a Mac or a PC or your iPhone, or, you know, you're sitting there in your Nikes or your New Balance driving in your Lexus or your Honda, you should understand private label. Yep. Because you're all label driven to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we could start a warfare here if I say that all Apple, you know, people are fanboys and all Android sucks. Like, we'll start a fanboy between brand wars, right? It'll happen. But so we create products that are branded. We create products that are customized, and we do innovation over invention. I've been an inventor and an inventor. I have patents on things that are never going to see the light of day and spent way too much money, and eventually discovered innovations, right? Innovations are the opportunity. A crock pot, okay, which your grandma might have and someone here has on, you know, their counter, was innovated to an Instapot. Instapot became very big. It's a $1 billion company. Maybe you got one of those sitting, if you got a wife or a significant other, somebody who loves to cook, probably got an Instapot. But what just, you know, happened in the last couple of years, air fryers have now become extremely popular. Those are just three countertop cooking devices that became in, you know, that people think they were invented, but in actuality, they're just innovations. Mm-hmm. So we just innovate ideas on existing products. That way, when it's easier to find a product, and many of the products we get daily profits from come from our environment, come from things we bought, come from things that are all around us. So to answer the question, you know, what the heck do I sell? Look at everything you've bought. And if you bought on Amazon in the last 90 days, by Amazon's own admission, 60% of the products that move through Amazon.com are third-party sellers like us, which means that a good portion of the products you bought came from people like us, which should answer the question, could I sell that product if someone else is selling it? And the answer is yes. So really what it gets down to is, can I make it profitable? That's what really, you know, most people want to know. It's like, I can determine a product, I can find a thing to sell, but the question is, can I sell it profitably? Mm-hmm. And you got to go by the numbers correctly. You have to pencil them in correctly. You have to understand what numbers you should pencil in correctly, so that you can determine that a product in the market you would be interested about, maybe it's backwards into a passion like biking or cycling or outdoors or something you love to do, and you want to sell one of those products in the market, you've got to make sure that with Amazon fees and marketing fees and logistic fees and cost of goods for that product and any customizations you do to make it a private label brand, that it's something you can sell profitably. That's actually most important to the whole process, because once you learn that process, you can put anything in a box and sell it to somebody for 30 seconds or less on Amazon. And, and once you understand the product is really just the exchange, the median of exchange between you and the customer passing through Amazon's system, then you realize that it's not the product at the end of the day. While you're going to create a good product, it's assumed you're going to build something good, and we're not going to sell what we call me too or just crappy cheap products.
Sure.
So we are going to typically sell products 50 to 150 in retail range. We're going to sell a problem-based product to fix a problem. And we're going to gain the reaction from whatever the customer is. They want to jump faster, go higher, lose weight, gain weight, you know, do something, chop faster, cut faster, whatever it is. And we're going to produce that reaction through the Amazon channel. And then the solution is our product. The solution is, if they have our product, it's going to resolve that problem. And so you can tap into all kinds of data sets. We have 10 years worth of data sets inside of our system. You can tap into data sets that are out there that give you an understanding and a confidence of being able to sell that product. But really what it gets down to is presenting it properly. Because think about it, right? If you ever bought anything on Amazon?
Oh yeah, this microphone right here.
Okay, so did you have it in your hands? Did you look at one? Were you able to touch it before you ordered it?
No.
Right, so you bought it on what?
On trust.
Trust.
And, yeah.
And faith, trust and faith.
Yeah.
That it
yeah.
would be what you wanted, and that it would be delivered in 2 days or less, and that, you know, you would get the outcome you were looking for, which was more quality audio. Mm-hmm. So you didn't actually buy the product. You bought the faith and belief and trust in the system and the product itself. And the product was basically the exchange of that. And if you loved it, you might leave a review. Mm-hmm. If you didn't like it, you leave a negative review. And that kind of closes the cycle. So really, at the end of the day, you now trust to a degree the manufacturer of the private label product you bought. And so we are in the same exchange median. We are in the same mechanism at the end of the day. Yeah. And we just happen to choose Amazon because it has that really strong last mile delivery system.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with that, we can produce any kind of product that we can brand from a brand no one's ever heard of and put it through Amazon's trust and authority system, leverage that familiarity, trust, and similarity, and then deliver products to people.
Yeah. What's up, Central Illinois? You know what you all need? Y'all need some CIBL podcast swag. And thanks to our newest sponsor, Jedco Sales, you can now find our swag at CIBLmerch.com. You can find t-shirts, sweatshirts, polos, hats, and more, all classically adorned with our famous CIBO podcast logo. If you want to represent and support your favorite podcast, check out CIBLmerch.com. That's CIBLmerch.com. If you like our store, you can also build your very own business swag store with the help of Jedco Sales in Effingham, Illinois. Jedco is owned by previous CIBL guests, Andrew and Laren Dial. They've set up a special discount offer for CIBL guests and listeners to set up your very own custom branded swag store. You can now offer branded apparel to your employees, customers, and fans, and Jedco will fulfill all the orders for you. Contact Jedco at sales@jedcosales.com. That's sales@jedcosales.com. And tell them that Garrett and Derek sent you. Let Jedco help you get noticed.
Well, I know that there's probably people listening like, oh, I don't even know where to start. But you also mentioned something before that I want to go back to. You said process several times. And it looks like or sounds like Voltage is the one that can help with that process. Is that correct?
Well, sure. I mean, there's a playbook and a lot of people have playbooks. Ours just has been developed over 10 years and tens of thousands and tens of millions of dollars and moving hundreds to millions of products across the system. We've developed a process of data and a playbook to get expected results from an outcome. We don't hedge an invention like we talked about earlier. We innovate existing products in the marketplace. We don't order 10,000 of them and go see if the market wants it. We order maybe 100. And test the market to validate the process. If something rings, then we go, great, is the numbers and the data and everything looking great for that product? Then we order more of it. We put good money after good product. Yeah. We will risk some money to determine what the market wants, but we're certainly not smart enough to tell the market what it wants. I think a lot of people think you got to be like Elon Musk. You got to have a Shark Tank invention. You got to do, they're overcomplicating something that's as simple as find a product and sell a product. Like that's what happens.
Awesome.
And so, you find all kinds of products. I mean, even products you've bought through Amazon that you could potentially sell as long as the numbers make sense. And then you just simply create a brand. I know that sounds like we can create a brand in 10 minutes. There's AI systems and thought processes. But at the end of the day, you know, there's some mechanical things. There's opportunity cost for any channel. And someone might be saying, you know, Amazon takes your ideas. They've been known to have people inside their enterprise. Okay. Not as a business policy, but people in their enterprise take money to hurt other products. It's a system. It has its fault points, right? Every system does. I used to be a government contractor in the management consulting world for as a subcontractor. That's got some serious problems. And you learn to just deal with them, right? But you learn to deal with them like any other tool. Amazon is just a hammer we choose to swing. We can move to other, you know, hammers, like we moved to TikTok Shop or Shopify wholesale retail. We take our brand that we now control and move it into multiple channels. Which creates a much larger intrinsic value in the company. It creates higher multiples of valuation in these companies. And, you know, SaaS or software companies have been some of the highest evaluated to date. E-commerce is now getting ready to kind of trump that. If you have an e-commerce, physical product, multi-channel business, we can get SaaS evaluations on those now. So the opportunity to build these assets has never been greater, frankly. And you know what? At the end, you mentioned this a minute ago, kind of wrap that up. In terms of like challenges, business challenges, time and market, you know, demand, people, products, inflation, you know, you still buy milk, you still buy gas, you still buy food, no matter what the price is, you still buy goods and services. And at the end of the day, outside of prostitution, this is the oldest profession in the world, which is selling products. It's just Amazon is a mechanism of selling products in exchange. And it is really a hedge against inflation. It's a hedge against change in the market. If I control the goods and flow of goods that people want and are in demand, then I can move with the market. That's a very powerful move, right?
Well, there's two points you kind of made in your last explanation there. The first one was you're not going out and buying thousands of these products just to see if it's going to work. So,
Throwing and sticking against the wall. It's all 80% of the work is done up front to even determine that we want to sell 100 units of it.
Yeah.
So that predictable outcomes will occur. Not 10,000 units, not 8,000, not even 1,000. We're just going to test the first market segment. And that's one of the differentiations in the way we've done it.
Yeah.
As opposed to a lot of people just going out and being like, well, I have to buy 5,000 units and spend all this money on product and I don't know if it's going to sell and what happens if it doesn't sell.
Exactly.
These are great questions.
Yeah, that's and that I know that's what some people are probably thinking is, man, I, you know, kind of going back to the where I don't have this the money to buy a warehouse, get staff. It's a smaller investment than going all in on a product till you research the market and
It
figure out it's going to
really
work.
is. It is. And I don't want anybody to start into the e-commerce world with less than 15 to 30,000 on the business side itself. It is a physical product asset. It is driven by the physical products. If anybody listening to this understands the momentum of materials, goods, and services to produce an outcome or produce a product, then you understand you have to also manufacture and build these products. There's a cost to that. So, and the cost of operations comes from the movement of the product. And of course, we want to turn over inventory and units as many times in a 12-month period as we can. And velocity of product moved, right?
And the other cool thing you mentioned, and you mentioned this before as well, is the asset that you're building. You're building a brand asset similar to, like you said, real estate before. It's not like you're, like you said, you're not drop shipping someone else's product that they're selling for a small profit and, you know, keeping the difference. And you're actually building a brand that has value that can turn into something that you can sell in the future and create a large amount of wealth from basically zero.
Building an asset.
So that's something that's very cool is this is your business. It's not Amazon's business, even though you are using Amazon as the conduit to do business. It is actually your baby that you're building from zero. So
Yeah,
that's
and
something
Amazon is
unique.
just what we, in the world of our language, we are an incubator, right? We simply incubate the products. We allow people to incubate within our systems and processes, playbooks, software, technology, and experience to build up a brand that has a multi-channel opportunity. We should always go beyond Amazon. Once we discover products and opportunities, we should open additional channels of revenue and create at least three legs of that revenue stream within those systems in case there's challenges with any one of those sales channels. You should not stay on Amazon 100% as your only sales channel. That's too risky. But it is a great place to go meet 150 million buyers who want to buy something in 30 seconds or less because that's the whole reason they're there. And you know, getting eyeballs on the offer is a big problem for people who are new in business. How do I, you know someone's going to buy this? How do I get them to buy my product? Well, we take it to a marketplace where that's all they do is buy product. And simply get good at offering them the right product at the right time at the right price and ensuring the profitability of it. That growth can go very fast in 3 to 5 years, extremely fast. We've had, you know, seven, eight figure, nine figure companies in 3 to 5 years. That used to take decades in the world of product movement before. It no longer takes decades anymore in the world of online marketplace that we deal with now. And it is planting your flag in a virtual real estate. We have an asset that's very similar to real estate in many ways. You can have a multi-tenant. You can short-term rental your products. You can do a lot of the similarities in e-commerce that you can do in the real estate world.
Very unique, very unique. That's cool. We've talked about a playbook a little bit, so I want to talk about your actual book. That's probably kind of a playbook.
It is.
Tell us about the book that you just released recently. It sounds like in January, maybe.
It did in January. Yeah, January
Cool.
this year. It was a labor of love. Took about a year to get it done. It was based on 15 different podcasts that I did. I have a podcast called High Voltage Business Builders Podcast that we release every week that talk to people who have done 5, 10 million, or 100 million in sales and interview them about their experiences, journey, etc. And the podcasts that are relative to it are playbook that followed along similar in the way we build businesses. Think about money, think about assets, think about Wealth Without Wall Street. Those guests wrote a chapter in each one of them based on their podcast.
Awesome.
So
Very
there are
cool.
15 contributors to the book. It all follows the playbook of building a business and an e-commerce business-based asset with cash flow and investments into other things and Wealth Without Wall Street, while building up the ability to exit, and talks about different exit strategies and what to consider for value. So the whole book is a culmination of about 400 pages of 15 different experts, including myself. And Kevin Harrington, who wrote the foreword. He was the original Shark Tank and my mentor, who helped me put together the foreword for the book. So I was honored to have him be a part of that. He sold about 6 billion in products, and someday maybe I'll level up to him. We'll see. I'm still on the path. It may take me a little bit longer, but that was part of the book, and you, people can grab it from our website and check it out and get started into, you know, reading about how to build wealth without Wall Street through the e-commerce channel and physical assets.
That's awesome. So they can find it on your website, which is voltagedm.com. Can they find it on Amazon as well?
Absolutely. Found
There
it
we
on
go.
Amazon. Almost automated income with FBA. You'll find it there. If you choose Amazon, that's great too.
I like it. I like it. Perfect. Well, we're running close. We're getting close to the 30-minute mark, Neil.
All right.
But
All right.
I'd like for you, before we jump off of here, just tell us a little bit more about Voltage and what people could expect if they work with you, just kind of how that would work, where they can learn more, that type of stuff.
So in simple terms, Voltage is a company that launches and we grow and we exit and acquire in the e-commerce space, specifically starting with Amazon FBA and then moving into multiple channels. So as an incubator and a consulting firm, and then obviously running our own business model, we do allow about 5 to 7 people to interview into our business builders group every month. They must interview with me. There's a process of application. And really, I'm looking for business builders who understand the real business of aspect, not a side hustle or a hobby. Want to turn this into a 3 to 5 year life-changing opportunity. And then we mentor them for 12 months one-on-one to help them build up, stand up, and grow up these businesses into asset producing income streams. So it is a qualification and by invitation only process.
Awesome.
That they get involved in what we do. And we leverage all of our systems and technology and experience and 20 plus years in the world of online and business and e-commerce. My partner's been online longer than that. He's been with me for about 11 years. He was a financial real estate guy, had about $125 million portfolio before I met him, and is very, very good in the financial tactical. He's the other right half of my brain. And together, we work through our team at Voltage. We've got about 7 people working directly in the operations of the company. We operate companies that have DTC brands and move them to Amazon, or we help stand up Amazon brands and move them to multiple channels. And we basically give people an opportunity to ride shotgun with us under performance goal in a consulting arrangement, because I believe in putting some skin in the game. And that's what Voltage is really doing. Well, you know, continuing to build our own brands and operations. And I can do this now because I've shown people how to get that almost automated income through operators who run my companies. I don't touch the files anymore. I don't mess with the systems anymore. I have very intelligent operators. We trained them all up from within our business builders group to operate our companies for us. So that's what Voltage is about. It's about incubating, building, and exiting companies.
Excellent. That's awesome. And I will put a few links down below in the show notes to VoltageDM.com, as well as some links to your book, and make sure people know where to find you. I'll also link your podcast as well to make sure they can get all the information they want from Neil and Voltage. So with that, Neil, is there any last thoughts or ideas you'd like to leave with our business community?
Well, you know, business is one of those things that you mentioned early on, and I think this is where a lot of business owners are at right now, kind of what's the risk, where's the opportunity, things are changing. We know that inflation and transitory things are occurring, and we see issues with the system that we're involved in now and wonder how to take opportunity from it. It's always a very challenging thing to go from a feeling of scarcity into abundance and mindset, and realizing that, you know, while there is scarcity in some locations, there is abundance in others. It's just we have to shift, or maybe be willing to pivot, or even willing to take risk when others are not, to gain opportunities and footholds that can grow much larger later on. We just have to be willing to risk certain things. I know that in the 2008, 2009, 10 market, while so terrible with real estate, there were a lot of people in 9 and 10 who took risks to buy those depreciated properties at that point that didn't make sense to a whole lot of people, and then have rode that wave back up into, you know, lots of gains. And I have some friends that did that really well. They were able to take that and overcome any fears and concerns in the market and push through that and take opportunity where others were not willing to go. And I would just encourage anybody who's listening to this today to remind themselves of that. There is a lot of abundance. We don't really live in scarcity in the United States, although it feels like we do. And if you can shut a lot of that nonsense off and walk away from it, you will realize there is a lot of opportunity in our country. Whether you're online, real estate, building businesses, or digging ditches, there's still a huge amount of opportunity in our country. So don't forget it.
Awesome. I love it. Well, for all you loyal listeners out there, make sure you subscribe to the CIBL podcast on your favorite podcast platform. While you're there, please leave us a review. You can also find us on social media, mainly Facebook and LinkedIn. You can connect with me and Garrett there personally as well. Until next time, Neil, you've officially been civilized. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. I've been honored to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Central Illinois Business Leaders Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/CIBL podcast. You can also follow us on LinkedIn. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. It's the civilized thing to do.
What's up, Central Illinois business owners? We know that insurance and employee benefits are one of the most expensive, confusing, and frustrating hurdles that you face in your business today.
Garrett and I work with Central Illinois businesses to create insurance and risk management programs and employee benefit solutions that reduce risk, enhance your business, and maximize your profitability. Head to CIBLinsurance.com to learn more about insurance solutions that are specifically designed for your Central Illinois businesses and to watch our educational videos about work comp, employee health insurance, commercial insurance, and other insurance products to help your business go to the next level. Go to CIBLinsurance.com. We'll see you there.